Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, here to the Travis Turner Show. We thank you so much for being with us here on 1340 WNBS, our show streaming at 1340WNBS.com. We move high speed thanks to our friends at Time Warner Cable. And we are very pleased to have our friend Ed Chapman back with us here on this Thursday morning. And Mr. Chapman, as we welcome you in, several things I'd want to get your opinion and perspective on, but I guess I'll let you sort of share with us your thoughts on the topic I was addressing as you drove in, as you arrived here at the studio. The idea of quote-unquote fairness and parity and competition in professional sports, how important is it that leagues try and maintain it, ensure that it happens? Can you ensure that it happens? Is it the best thing for sports? How do you see it?
I just don't think you can legislate it. I mean, it's going to there's going to be a certain level of competitiveness within each owner or ownership group that owns the franchise. And just as you cannot make every game come down to the wire out of, you know, some desire for great competitiveness in every on-court matchup or on-field matchup, well, the fact that every ownership group or owner doesn't have the same desire to win, the same competitiveness, means that they're going to run their franchise in certain ways.
Oh, wait a minute.
Some are going to run it to win, and some of them are going to run it to make money.
Wait, so you're telling me that not every ownership group is in it to win it?
I think not. And then there are some who are smart enough to realize that there are cycles typically
Indeed.
within your talent roster, you know, your roster's talent, that will in some cases prevent, okay, we can't legitimately win it, but so we're going to be wise about putting at least a realistic put a product out there that is still worthwhile without this idea of having to tank every time to try to get better, because Golden State has proven that if you draft effectively and player develop effectively and make roster decisions effectively, you become incredibly relevant right away, or not right away, but in a reasonable amount of time. You draft Steph Curry when six other teams could have had him. You draft Klay Thompson just outside the top 10, maybe.
11, I think.
Yeah, I think he was 11th. And then you draft Draymond Green outside the whole first round.
Everybody could have had him.
Outside the whole first round. You piece them together. You get the right coaching staff. It can be done. But that's what makes it exceptional, is that it's the exception and it's not the rule. And any sort of legislation to try to mandate it or force everybody always ends up falling flat at some point.
Well, and
just like salary caps.
Right. Well,
I mean, they're great, but
I think that's what we see, is that, you know, the flower finds its way through the sidewalk if that's who it is.
Mm-hmm.
If it is the exceptional, and that's when we get something really special, I think, is when you have greatness within your sport. I think that's what every professional sports league needs, is it needs greatness. That's what ensures your relevance within this smorgasbord of options that you've got out there. Because remember, these are entertainment businesses. These are entertainment dollars. If you want people to come into your arena, into your stadium, they got to have a reason to. You got to give them a good product. And, you know, I never meant to go there specifically. I thought when I looked at the Jonah Carey piece, I was going to spend most of my time talking about Durant and the Warriors and the NBA. But because I was already there, the place I started was with using the example of Shirley's Pirates, 20 years in the wilderness for what had been a pretty proud franchise.
Yeah.
But when they got the right people with the right plan in place, all of a sudden now they've got this beautiful stadium. They've become a model franchise. They're in the mix all of the time. But that made me think of the even greater story, because it has flourished in the salary cap era. Another small market professional club, the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah.
I mean, this San Antonio would not have been the place the NBA meant to create greatness, but that's exactly what happened, thanks to the folks down in San Antonio.
Exactly. And so, you know, for those that look at Oklahoma City and say, you know, realistically, the Russell Westbrook era is probably over or about to be over in a year at the most, then you're going to say, you know, they're going to be a barren wasteland. Well, they don't have to be.
That's right.
They don't have to be. I mean, is that a market destination for free agents? No, not necessarily. But neither ever has San Antonio.
Right.
That's not a big market either. Was Golden State ever a destination? now, like you said earlier, no, it never was. It only has become one now because of what they've been able to build through the draft and through some pretty shrewd decision making on guys, you know, that came and fit their system, made their franchise something now with the ownership group, the coaching staff and everything, made it something to be desired that wasn't before. Why is San Antonio desirable for free agents? Why would Duncan and Ginobili and Parker all, you know, defer money and take less money at various times to make sure they stayed there? Because of the entirety of the franchise. And so it can be done. It just requires really talented people with a good game plan. And to me, the game plan is not, hey, let's tank it all the way out and let's try to get as many top three draft picks as we can and hope that that works. Because we haven't seen that work yet. Yep. We haven't seen that work. If Philadelphia, of course, they had to abort the mission here with Sam Hinkie before they could get all the way through it. And so what are they going to have to show for it in the long run? I don't know. They're trying to trade pieces now, and people won't trade with them. Or seemingly that's the way it appeared at the draft, is that they had all these big men and all these assets they had acquired through high draft picks that they can't do any – they can't move them, and they still don't have a plan for, well, what's their roster going to look like that's going to make them become relevant. I don't think they have one still. So, you know, there are ways to do it. And like you said, there are franchises that have proven to make it so. You know, to me, honestly, the only ones that you can compare cross sport are baseball and basketball. You know, to me, football's different. The idea that everybody goes 8-8 in football doesn't affect anything there. It doesn't seem like. I mean, the salary cap almost demands that happens.
Well, see,
they don't get to keep their good players and their great teams together.
Here's the difference. I noted earlier on the NFL. I think what has made the NFL parity happen is their scheduling. Last place teams get a last place schedule. First place teams get a first place schedule. I think that's what's helped them be topsy turvy in conjunction with their salary cap.
That's true. You make everything set up in such a way that not only did they get the top draft pick by finishing lower, but they're also going to get, quote unquote, the easier schedule as much as can be controlled, not knowing how every team's going to change from year to year. But theoretically, they get an easier road back to relevance.
Yep.
As much as the schedule can control it. And the product is the product. I mean, you get 16, you know, you get 17 weeks, 16 games of the product, and you got a market that is just salivating for all the football you can get.
Yep.
So the ticket price, the fan bases and the TV deals are not dependent on the fact that there's no great teams.
You make such a great point.
I mean, don't care if there's a great team. We only get one game a week out of each team.
A 16-game season and 82 and 162 games, they're so vastly different.
That's right. So when you're playing 3 and 4 times a week in basketball and you're playing 6 or 7 times a week in baseball and you've got to sell that product, you know, that – I mean, let's just check and see what the ticket revenues are for the Atlanta Braves this year.
Right.
I mean, how many tickets are they going to sell?
Not many.
I mean, they're going to be stuck. They're going to be stuck trying to promote 81 home games, and the only reason they're going to have 2 sellouts is because they had an opening day crowd in the final year of Turner Field. So they sell out on opening day, and they'll sell out on the final day because it's the last game in Turner Field, and they had good teams that played there.
Yep.
So the fan base will show up for those two, and you can sell. You can sell much more easily 8 home games for that football franchise that is wallowing in mediocrity, who is still only 2 games out of a playoff spot, even though their record is 5-7. You know,
yeah. And plus, football has it's an event.
That's right. It's
tailgate.
One thing each week. Yeah. You're not trying to sell tickets 4 times that week. Yeah. You're not trying to sell tickets to a 10-game homestand day after day after day. And so in baseball and basketball, the team that falls out of the race loses relevance, and they don't generate the same revenue. So it's a little bit different animal there as far as competitive balance. Now, what I like about what baseball did in the Bud Selig era was start the sharing of the revenue among the teams in a way that enabled a Pittsburgh small market team to get up to a floor, you know, because they were in the sub, they were in the sub basement as far as money to spend on a roster, as things changed into the 80s and 90s. So being able to have that revenue sharing that allowed teams to get up to that reasonable standard of, okay, here's your floor for salaries. Now, we won't cap it on the top end, but that and the decision by many of these franchises in the smaller markets to get smarter, work harder and smarter, mostly smarter, in their player development, in their draft game plan, things like that, where they draft players and where they develop players through their minor league system, has enabled them. And then they do have the financial wherewithal to keep some of those guys now, whereas Andrew McCutchen would have already been gone a couple of years ago, in the 1990 system. You know, the Bonilla, Bonds, Van Slyke guys would have all been gone.
And Major League Baseball, as it turns out, has done a fabulous job, and it, I think it's largely done this organically, but of producing a lot of different franchises that have been really good.
Oh, it's been, I mean, it has been an era unlike any other, of course, in baseball. Of course, we've got more teams now, but even in the divisional era of 1969 forward, when they split into the two divisions in each league, then into the 90s where they went three divisions in each league, I mean, there has never been a stretch in the, you know, like the last 10 or 12 years of the number of teams who have made the playoffs at least one time, and have made, in many cases, you know, franchises have made deep runs. And the idea that Tampa Bay would have ever been a playoff team,
right?
You know, when they first entered into Major League Baseball, well, that seemed like a, when they showed up in the late 90s, you thought, what an absolute disaster. What a terrible decision to put a franchise there. It's not going to work. Well, it still may be questionable as to whether or not that's a great location or a place that can sustain.
But the franchise has made it work.
But the franchise found a way to put a competitive team on the field and even win some, within 10 or 12 years.
Let me ask you about this Kevin Durant move. I want to hear you talk about it from a basketball perspective, but the first thing I wanted to do was address, you know, the quote-unquote character of the move. I struggle so much when I hear people criticize a guy who is he served out his contract and well, and they kill him for where he goes. And I talked to our audience earlier this week about, you know, we have this reference point of, you know, well, Bird would have never done that, Magic would have never done that, Michael would have never done that, and of course Michael reminded us the other day that, no, of course he would have never done that. Hey, fellas, that's easy to say now. That's easy to say now, and I reminded our audience, Magic Johnson came in as a rookie. Magic comes into the Lakers, and they win the championship. Of course, he joined a fella there in L.A. by the name of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar,
right,
who is just one of the finest players to ever play the game. And they very wisely added pieces like James Worthy and Byron Scott over the years when they needed to, a guy like Michael Thompson. Clay's daddy was an important piece for them on championship teams. But as one writer, I think it was Russ Bengston, wrote, Magic and Larry were born on third base. You know, I mean, in terms of winning championships with these storied franchises, Larry came in and helped the Celtics go, I think, from 28 wins to 61 wins his rookie year. They couldn't get out of the East. The Sixers beat them in the finals. So what does old Red Auerbach do? He pulls the wool down over Golden State in a deal that would net the Warriors Joe Barry Carroll. Fella by the name of Robert Parrish and another fella by the name of Kevin McHale would come to the Celtics. And what did they do? They won the championship. A couple of years went by, they did win the title. So Red went out and got Dennis Johnson.
Yeah.
And they won the title. And so did they ever have to go anywhere? No. The pieces were brought to the table. But here is the interesting thing about our reaction to Kevin Durant and this idea that you should be the man, you should win it by yourself. All the time, what do we say? Team above me.
Mm-hmm.
We want team players. We want guys that aren't about them. And we want guys who want to win. This guy went to a better team where he's going to have to share the limelight and the basketball with other people in pursuit of a championship. When did that become a bad thing to do?
when it doesn't fit your narrative. You know, when it doesn't fit your narrative, and that's what you need to be able to say that about him. You know, if he had taken the Lakers money, then you say, what a great move, gonna go bring back a proud franchise, gonna help bring them back from oblivion. You know, or he goes to, you know, say he goes to Boston. Ah, they're great again. And, you know, and so he puts them back in the championship picture that they've been out of now for a few years. I mean, there were certain places, though, that he couldn't go.
Right.
He couldn't go. He couldn't go without the narrative turning against him. He couldn't go to Golden State. He couldn't go to San Antonio. Those were the places he couldn't go because they're already championship caliber, championship winning places. And if he does that, he is saying, in effect, the narrative now can go, well, you just admitted you're not good enough to lead a franchise to a championship. And he may be okay with that. Right. I mean, everybody has their ego. Great players have their ego. But there's something about it that he said, I think he had to look at it. There must have been – he said, it's just – he does not love playing with Russell Westbrook. How much longer was this going to go on? If he signs and stays, then there's two possibilities. Number one, they figure out a way to talk Russell into staying. Or Russell bolts after next year and he's left there by himself. So which one of those is a good thing?
Right.
Yeah. He doesn't think either one of those. I mean, if I'm stuck playing, I can't live with him and I can't live without him here. So the idea that a great player wants to play with other great players, when did that become a bad idea?
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, so, and this is.
Because at the college level, that's all we want for our team.
Just load them up.
Get more.
Just load them up. That's right. That's the same. I mean, and so. You know, of course, in baseball, because you've got starting pitchers, relief pitchers, and nine positions on the field that, you know, if a franchise like the Yankees signs, you know, if they've got six guys all together that are the highest paid at their particular position, nobody thinks anything of that because they all just get one turn to bat and they're all pursuing a championship. But in basketball, it's different because you got fewer people on the court at a time. Each guy can impact the game more directly, and it does look like it fits the narrative of it's a bailout move for a guy who has never been the guy to lead a team to a championship, and now he is admitting that he cannot be the guy or doesn't want to be the guy, and that's, I mean. That gets your clicks on the internet, and that gets your ratings on the radio or the TV to continue to bash him in that direction because it's easier.
And I'll tell you, the closest things that I've ever seen in our lifetime to guys who could lead you to the championship, Jordan, Bird, Magic, LeBron. And I'm almost willing to, and it's going to hurt my mouth to say Isaiah Thomas. But the dude was, I mean, he was just an unbelievable competitor.
Yeah, he was cold-blooded.
And a great, great player. But none of those guys won the championship by themselves. I mean, you know, you and I, Jordan's the guy. But he played with one of the all-time great players in Scottie Pippen. I'm sorry, Scottie Pippen was a great, great two-way player.
No doubt.
He just was.
Yeah.
And they had plenty of other good pieces. But Bird played with McHale, one of the greatest low-post offensive players of all time. Parrish, a great center of his era. Dennis Johnson, a Hall of Fame level guard, and plenty of other good pieces. Again, Magic just played with freaking Kareem, for goodness sakes, who wasn't quite at the height of his powers anymore, but still
mattered. And James Worthy,
and
the Hall of Famer,
and Scott was a very good player.
Yep.
And I mean, it's not like the Lakers were going to go without great pieces. And LeBron won with Wade and Bosh in Miami, and Kyrie Irving, as it turns out, offensively,
right,
is one of the best guards in the world. So, And I'll be honest, outside of Jordan-esque stuff, what LeBron did in the last three games in the finals, about as good as I've ever seen from one guy.
Yep.
And we had talked about, hey, why did he just do that all the time?
And it took all of that.
Yeah, and he did.
To get those.
But, you know, you look at Kevin Durant, and people can kill him if they want to. I think he did the smart thing. I think he looked at himself and said, you know what? I'm not going to win a championship by myself. He's a great player.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not that kind of player. He's not the guy that makes everybody around him better, is he?
And that was then, to me, that's how I explained to people the why wouldn't it work with Westbrook and Durant. So they don't make each other better, and they don't make the guys around them better. Now, that's not – I mean, that sounds like a terrible indictment of them as basketball players. But it's just the style of player they are. They are great, creative, almost unstoppable players. One-on-one, they are unstoppable offensive forces within themselves. But it does not translate to making the entire team unstoppable.
That's exactly right.
And what he sees in Golden State is these guys are great within the team concept. And I think he wants to be the team guy and he wants to win.
I told our audience earlier, regular season NBA, first place in passes per game,
yeah.
The Warriors, last place, the Thunder. Very simple.
Yeah, and everything that they hoped, and I mean, I know you have done the same thing. You've read as many things as you can about this just because it's interesting when a player like this makes a decision like this that seems unexpected and unprecedented. But one of the things that he hoped had changed with the coaching change with Billy Donovan was – the overall chemistry and this desire to be more of a well-rounded team, and yet nobody lost more fourth-quarter leads and was less efficient offensively in the fourth quarter than Oklahoma City. And what was it they couldn't do when they had the 3-1 lead to finish off?
Close it.
They couldn't close it in the fourth quarter. They were terrible in the last 6 minutes,
yep,
repeatedly.
Well, he looked around and said, we are who I thought we were.
That's right. And so what he needed was at least – he needs to play with at least one other guy that primarily sets up the other pieces. Now, again, how's it going to mesh? I don't know. He's going to have to take fewer shots. Thompson and Curry are both going to have to take fewer shots. And, you know, to me, Draymond Green is the – to me, he's the biggest variable because he could blow this whole thing up. If he decides he needs more shots,
right,
and he's more volatile to begin with, and he's actually the guy who creates,
yes,
scoring opportunities, he has his point center or point power forward position that he plays. He's the one who has the ball in his hands, and he's got to decide is direct, you know, who's coming off the screen. And the other question will now be is everybody still willing to set a screen, or is everybody looking to come off one?
Right.
Because you got Durant who wants to come off screens, and you got Thompson and Curry. Is everybody still willing to screen for each other? So, I mean, there's a strange dynamic that we'll have to see play out that we've never seen in terms of these kind of stars, these volume of shooters trying to play together. But can you blame him for thinking this could be the place I can win a championship? And apparently he has – He's weighed the cost and said, it's worth it to me and my reputation and what people think of me, which is my reputation. It's worth it.
Well, I mean,
it's worth it to pursue a championship this way.
Here's what Kevin Durant knows. If he stays his entire career in Oklahoma City and never wins a championship, is the bigger narrative going to be that he stayed or that he never won?
You know it. You know exactly what it's going to be. He's going to be revered in Oklahoma City.
Yep.
He retires 6 years from now after a 15-year career, having never won a championship, but having led the league in scoring so many times and a couple of MVPs and some heartbreaking playoff losses. But he signs back. Let's say if he stays with the Thunder, Westbrook says, I'm not going to play with him. So he leaves after one more year. the pieces don't ever fit together. They don't win a championship. Yeah, he's going to go down as a local legend, icon. Everything about Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City is a love fest for the rest of their life.
Yep.
And then the national narrative is, dude never won a championship.
Yeah.
So he becomes Stockton and Malone.
Yeah, or Barkley.
Or Barkley, you know.
And, of course, Barkley didn't stay in one place. Stockton alone stayed.
Stockton stayed to the end in Utah. He's adored and loved and worshipped locally. The national story, you know, the national narrative is, hey, Stockton and Malone could never win the title.
By the way, Charles referred to Kevin as trying to cheat his way to a championship. Does Charles have amnesia about his Houston stint?
Well, like he'll tell you, is he got traded late. He was traded. Charles's blackout is related to the fact that
poor Charles was never – he was always held hostage.
That's right. I got traded to Phoenix. They weren't good when I got there. And then I got traded to Houston. I was already shot as a player. So
he didn't force that deal, did he?
Yeah, he didn't play his hand at all. He just was a pawn in the hands of ownership. General managers just swapped him around.
Man.
And made it. Yeah, he was. I heard him on Mike and Mike yesterday. He said it's not the same. It's not the same. Not the same.
At least somebody asked.
That's right. He got traded. He said when I left Philly, I was traded for five guys, and Phoenix wasn't good when I got there. And then when I went to Houston, that didn't even count because he was 37 or something, and he said I couldn't play anymore.
Oh, that's fantastic.
He said, now I don't blame the Karl Malones and the Gary Paytons for chasing a ring at the end of their career when they're free agents. He goes, but that really wasn't what that was in Houston. Okay, so we'll put Drexler and Barkley and Olajuwon together. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And they could have won the over 35 world championship.
There's no question. If this all works in Golden State, how good could it be?
Oh, man, I mean, how much better can you be, you know, in the regular season?
Right.
You know, if it works, I guess it just becomes the best of what we saw with them plus a little bit more. I mean, when we saw them at their best, I can only think that if it works, and I do have some – concern about that,
right?
Honestly, I mean, there's still only so many shots to go around for those guys, and so do any of the three become discontent with the way it plays out? And I'm talking about Curry, Thompson, and Durant, just in terms of pure volume of shots that they are used to getting, even within their system. How much better can it get? I don't know, and I do worry that they may not be better defensively. They may not be, they may not be any better defensively. They may actually take a step backwards. What's Iguodala's health? You know, will he be able to continue to provide what he's provided? You know, I don't know. Will they be able to defend like they need to with the loss of Bogut and Barnes? Those are legitimate questions, I think. And so the idea is, if it works, what it'll look like is the most unstoppable offense ever.
Yeah. Well,
they will just literally outscore you.
Will there be nights that they make 25 or 33?
No question. I mean, whatever their standard of excellence has been, it could increase by 10 or 12%. You know, in terms of points per game or points in a quarter, whatever.
Because I mean,
made 3-point shots. Hey, you can't defend this.
That's the thing.
You cannot defend this.
I mean, if they're making shots, you literally cannot.
Your only defense is going to be that they miss enough of their 23 to 25 footers.
Yeah.
That's your only defense. That's it.
But you cannot just
have enough good perimeter defenders to guard that.
You know, and how in the world do you ever keep them out of space?
Right.
Because everybody's going to be hugged up. Don't leave, don't leave, don't leave.
That's right.
And any time three of them are from the top of the key to the wing to the corner on the same side of the floor, what are you going to do?
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, what you have to do theoretically is have a roster of with a handful of great defenders or great two-way players.
Right.
Because you need to be able to play them on both ends.
Well, that's just like I noticed, you know, Bill Simmons' website, The Ringer, was doing this game where they priced players, and for $15 you could build your team to try and beat the Warriors.
Right.
And Andy Glockner, who's one of my favorite basketball writer follows, he was going with folks like the Greek Freak up in Milwaukee, Paul George. I mean, he was going for these hyper-long, hyper-athletic guys that, you know, you have to use to either match up with or suppress these guys. And he said that's the thing, is that, you know, at these spots you're going to have to be able to find a way to make them uncomfortable. And the biggest thing is can you defend screen roll action 30 feet out on the floor?
Right. With all five of your positions.
With all of them.
And so if you can't, and here's the thing that makes that made the death lineup work when it worked best. I mean, to Cleveland's credit, especially LeBron's, I mean, his all-around greatness and then Kyrie's inability to be defended made the difference in those final three games. But the way you would theoretically in the old days you would beat that is you'd use your bigger lineup, pound them inside.
Yep.
You'd just kill them on offense. But you know what you're getting? You're getting 2 points for those baskets around the paint.
Well,
and they're going to get three.
And
they're just going to trade you two for threes as many times as they have to.
And here's the other deal: is the center position? Is it as basketball as we knew it? Is it dead?
It's pretty close. The idea of the low post scorer as the center. Essentially, now we have a hybrid. We have the center now is a power forward of days gone by. And really, it's not even the power forward of the 80s. It's the power forward of the early 2000s.
I mean,
just the great rebounder defender guy. But your power forward now is a hybrid small forward power forward. He's got to be able to shoot it, handle it, one of those two really well, and he's got to be able to defend multiple positions.
Yep.
He's got to be able to help on the pick and roll and defend multiple positions. And then you line up your guards. Basically, it's become three-guard basketball. It's like high school now. High school, a lot of times, you don't have a roster that has a center. So you play two forwards. One's a better rebounder, plays a little more inside. The other one maybe can stretch the floor and make an outside shot. And then you got three guards. And that's what we're starting to see now is essentially you're going to have three guards on almost every team. Look what Chicago thinks they're trying to do with Rondo, Wade, and Butler.
Somebody forgot to tell them, though, the guards have to be able to make jumpers.
Somebody has to make a shot, and it needed to be about 6 years ago.
that's a great 2009 team, isn't it?
That's right. When Jimmy was a rookie, this would have been great.
Wow.
But anyway.
Rondo.
But you can see that that's what the – you know, to me, that's what it's starting to – evolve into. You got your three guards. You've got your lead guard / point guard creator, but he's got to be able to score. You've got your dead eye shooter at one of those two spots, and then you've got your slasher driver creator at one of those other guard spots.
But you know, you're just so right. I mean, because the 2-for-3 exchange just doesn't work.
If we make, in like you saw Golden State do several times throughout the year and into the playoffs. They're making as many as 15 more threes than the other team on certain nights.
You're buried.
They're making 12 or 15 more threes than you are.
Well,
they're outscoring you 60-18 from the three-point line. You can beat that, but you're going to have to be terribly efficient on your twos and at the foul line.
Yeah, you just – well,
that's the only way you're going
to
beat
it. You're basically going to have to make 70% of your twos and all of your free throws.
Pretty close.
That you got there a lot.
Pretty close.
I mean, that's
because the 3-for-2 is not a big deal until somebody does it in bulk. And that's what's made Golden State so different.
What's going to happen with them? I bet there's a time this season where they make as many threes as the other team does twos.
Well, Well, you saw perhaps it got them in a little bit of trouble because Cleveland did an excellent job as the series went on of being physical and making it difficult to get clean looks. Even at the three-point line, but what you saw was they were taking as many threes as they were twos, and in some cases more. I mean, they were taking 40 three-point attempts. So they're going to take 40 and 50 three-point attempts some nights and they're going to make 50%.
You know what it would occasionally. You know what would make them unstoppable is if Durant had a little bit of post up game.
Well, yeah. I mean, if Durant and or Draymond could score in the post, but again, I mean, Kevin can back a guy down a little bit and raise up at 6'11" and score sort of from a mid post.
Yep.
Type scenario.
Yeah, because he likes that. And that's one thing about Durant. Durant's not just a three-point shooter.
And that's the thing about him is when you – if your one defender feels like he can't win that battle and you send another guy, he will find the open three-point shooter.
Right.
So now you're going to say stay home on the three-point shooters. Durant, to me, if I'm coach, you know, if I'm defending against them, I'm going to say, hey, buddy, you're on an island.
Yep.
If Durant starts backing you into the mid-post – do the best you can. It's still only worth two.
Right. Well, and see, that's the thing. What I think is going to happen for Durant with the Warriors is I think he's going to average 30 a game on 18 shots. Because you can't guard you against this team, you will not be able to guard him with multiple defenders, and no one can guard him with one.
Right. You can't just crowd him, you know, like you would have been able to do off an Andre Roberson, you know, the guys on his team that you know, you weren't even scared of Russell Westbrook's ability to make threes.
Right.
So every time he had the ball and was working on his guy, you could send another guy to at least crowd him and take away one of his driving lanes, even if you didn't straight up double team him. And so now you won't be able to shade him very often. And if you do, you're probably going to pay with a three.
Last thing before the break, who is most likely to stand in the Warriors' path?
Wow. Good question. I mean – San Antonio, they get the benefit of the doubt. You know, if you've got Leonard and you've got Aldridge, you've got something left in the tank with Tony Parker. You assume Pau Gasol can offer something. Maybe Duncan's gone into retirement, but you would think Gasol could offer a little more next year than Duncan could have offered. Are they the team? Maybe.
Could they ever play Gasol and Aldridge both against the Warriors?
See, that's going to be the issue. And that's going to be – I mean, that's the thing. You can say, well, you can't stop Aldridge and Gasol in the post. And, again, the Golden State answer will be, we don't care.
I wonder is it –
we'll trade you three for two.
I wonder if it's the Blazers.
That's the team that gave them, you know, if you paid attention, you saw that they gave them some fits. Of course, Curry was unhealthy during part of that. But Portland hadn't lost anything. And they picked up Evan Turner, who can provide a little bit more of a scoring boost at one of those wing positions, a decent defender. I mean, it's possible. It's possible that they make the next climb because realistically now the rest of the West – has become a hodgepodge. San Antonio may not be athletic enough. We certainly saw they couldn't stay with OKC this spring in the playoffs, so they're probably their style of play may not be able to overcome. So Portland's a good a guess as anybody to be in their way from the West. The Clippers, will they ever move past their level of dysfunction to become a true winning franchise?
I don't think anybody outside of DeAndre Jordan guards enough.
Right.
And, of course, the Warriors can blunt his effectiveness because he ain't going to be near the rim.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean.
So that's the thing. Yeah. You know, there are not very many really strong teams in the West right now. Everybody's sort of on this rebuild, you know, the fun franchise to watch and see if they can get in the playoffs and make a little noise.
T-Wolves.
It's the T-Wolves now.
Baby.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got, and here's the thing, they have the athleticism.
Yes, they do.
They're starting to create a roster full of athletes that could theoretically, in time, guard a Golden State team well enough to compete with them.
Oh yeah.
Now please don't assume that I'm saying they're going to do it this year.
Right.
They're not. They don't have enough experience yet. But Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine,
Andrew Wiggins.
The mobility of Karl Anthony Towns and the fact that he is a legitimate scoring option around the basket who can also step out. He could be a difference maker at the center position you know, in the new look NBA going forward. But it's going to take him a couple of years.
He's going to be a great one. Pretty darn good already.
He's on his way. Yeah, pretty he's on his way.
LeBron and company still the favorites to come out of the East?
From what I can see right now. I mean, Al Horford to Boston doesn't make enough difference, in my opinion.
They didn't get enough done there.
I mean, he's a nice piece, but he's not flipping anything around. I mean, it's possible that Atlanta actually got better, essentially swapping him for Dwight Howard in terms of production.
Right.
Now, Dwight being Dwight, I'd much rather have Al Horford on my team,
right.
The person, it seems like. But, yeah, I mean, who's really done anything? It's all just musical chairs, and who's really done anything?
And the Kings.
The Knicks, you know, the Knicks.
I'm interested to see what happens.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. But the theory that's been floated about that the Knicks are preparing for the next summer possibility, Wade could opt out after 1 year. He can be a free agent again. LeBron can be a free agent next summer. They like to play together with Carmelo, CP3, Chris Paul.
Also will be a free
agent. Could be a free agent.
Everybody comes in on the mid-level into New York, and Phil has he wins his grand plan. Because Knicks fans are not a fan of Jackson's work so far at all.
Well, they don't have anything to show for it yet. Porzingis is all they've got. Fortunately, that worked out because nobody knew what to expect there.
Interesting. And I'll tell you something. I'll say this. It is amazing how much power the players have taken by making the decision that I will determine my own fate. And this idea of signing a contract and then 1 year and a player option.
Yeah, they
put it in their own hands.
They have left themselves all kinds of flexibility now that they are not they can sign a 5 or 6 year deal, but it's going to have an opt out in there. I'm not going to stick it out. We're not going to have one of these deals where you don't build around me. Yeah. If you don't bring enough good pieces together early on, I'll get out of here. And what do? If you want to sign them bad enough, you got to put that in the contract.
I have to think, to a degree, the reason that stuff like this has caused fans so much angst is that fans don't feel like they have any control anymore. That you know, we talked about, if Durant goes, well, either I'm stuck with Westbrook or he leaves me. I think fans now feel like, what do I identify with? What can I trust is mine?
Yeah. Well, I was explaining to my 14-year-old Jackson about this because he is a huge Oklahoma City fan. And so he's terribly distraught at KD leaving.
Yeah.
We have reached now the backside of the opposite side of the reserve clause.
Mm-hmm.
When the team owned all your rights and controlled – hey, as long as we want you, you can play. The only other choice you'll have is we'll trade you. And if we release you, everybody else agrees. All of us as owners, that guy got released. None of us are going to sign him.
Right.
So they did collude, and they did all sorts of backroom deals, and the players had no control. And now, essentially, the players have wrested control in these 40 years plus of the era of free agency that started with Curt Flood in the late 60s and into the 70s with baseball, and created a system now. Plus, you've got the economic maneuverings of the different leagues to try to make teams competitive with salary caps and salary floors. And now you mesh all that together, and the players have wrested control, and they are calling – essentially all the shots, and you can get your so-called super team together. And me and my boys can figure out a way to all play together at the same place at the same time. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? I don't really know. It just is a thing.
It is a thing. And I tell you what players have been willing to do in doing this is they have passed on long-term guaranteed money.
That's true.
They're banking on health and certainly on endorsement power. Because, Durant might well have signed, or LeBron his last time, they might well have signed 6-year deals.
They could have gotten more, they could have gotten more. They're running the risk that their value may drop
before they get
the next deal. And even Wade, notably has never been the highest paid player on his own team for 13 years.
By the way, Pat Riley, sneaky, let him out of town because he didn't want to rebuild the Heat with a guy that's nearly
34.
As old as me and you.
That's right. Smart move. So we'll see where the Heat can go from here. They drop out of relevance, essentially, right now, because you might also see Chris Bosh, possibly, unfortunately, may never play again. We don't know about his health concerns. You know, he's at a point where it probably would be wise to just take the money and be done health-wise.
And I think Pat knew.
Yeah.
You know, we're
– so we've got salary cap – We're going to have tons of flexibility, so we try to do the South Beach thing again. Yeah. Who wants to bring their talents to South Beach?
And he already knows that list of guys that'll be free agents after next year.
That's true.
I'm sure he's also angling for the same thing. The Knicks are looking at reunion tour boys.
Hey, anybody? Is Steph Curry's contract up next year?
Oh, hey.
Is his four-year deal up next year?
Yes, it is.
Because he's making $11 million a year.
Yes.
He went for 4-44 before he was Steph Curry.
He'll be getting a healthy bump.
That's right.
From somebody.
And the thing is about with all the TV revenue now that's increased the salary cap is Golden State won't have to dismantle the team to be able to afford him. And if he follows, let's say, the San Antonio model of those great stars, he may take less and defer money and make it easier to keep us all together if we like it.
And that's the thing. And that ultimately is the reason that I don't mind these guys doing what they're doing, because we're seeing guys motivated not just by money, but about a desire to be great and win championships. That's okay by me.
Yeah. I mean, what else do you want them to be motivated by?
I mean, guys who just say cut the check. I don't care if we lose 55 games. I have no interest in that.
Yeah, just make sure I get to stay. You know, we'll all just – all of us stars will stay at whatever place. We'll be the only star on our team making the most money on our team. Is that all you care about?
I know one thing. I'll be sounding sleepy next season because I'm going to be up late watching Golden State a lot.
And they will be on nonstop.
They'll be on all the time.
We will essentially have a season pass to watch their games.
And, of course, the Heat got that treatment when they, when LeBron put that group together. But you could see the highest saturation of national TV games since the Jordan Bulls.
I don't think there's any doubt.
With this Golden State team. And by the way, the man who set the template with the high-dollar one-year deal, Mr. Michael Jordan. Back in those second three-peat days when people asked him about the contract, he said, me and Jerry will get in a room. And
He got 1 year, $30
million? Yeah,
I'll stick around for another year.
Yeah.
And $30 million was insane.
Oh, at the time,
it was insane.
Well,
it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
20-plus years ago.
So he said, Jerry, write that check, and then you write me another one again next year if I want it.
That's right. So.
Hey, it's good to be great, man.
That's right.
It's good to be
hey,
great.
Hey, Jerry, maybe I stick around, maybe I don't.
By the way, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, happy to drop in.
Good to have you. I'm going to throw us into commercial break. I'll come back and wrap things up. But
Probably got some sponsors that need
to. We got to thank some folks.
Yeah, they need to be heard from.
But I didn't mean for us to just riff for 50 minutes uninterrupted, but that's always good.
Well, we've done it before.
It's like the old days of the show. Thanks, buddy.
Yep.